Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me tonight, second time guest, Matt Chin. What's up, Matt?
Nick, what's going on, man? Excited to talk about these Denver Nuggets. One of the most exciting teams, in my opinion, going into this season. Definitely a team that I'm really excited to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. And the Nuggets are kind of a team that people sleep on a lot, in my opinion. They're coming in number 11 on our ranking, which is kind of a surprise because, like I said, a lot of people sleep on them. But before we talk about the ranking, let's talk about the Nuggets from last season. You know, they just missed out in the playoffs. They had a big season from Nikola Jokic. What are your thoughts on this team from last year?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great season for them toward the end. I think, their offensive efficiency, they finished fourth in the league, 29th in defensive efficiency. So a huge, huge difference there on both ends of the floor. But, a really fast-paced offense. I love the way that they move the ball, especially when they figured out, midway through December, that Jokic playing four round one and just letting him facilitate from the high and low post. You know, it took them half a season to figure that out, but once they figured it out, everything just clicked for them. And they were, one of the teams that I was the most impressed with second half of the year last season.
Yeah, when they finally gave the keys to Jokic and let him do his thing, and early on in the season, they tried to, start Jokic and Nurkic. That didn't work out. They put Jokic on the bench. You know, obviously, that was a terrible idea. You know, they did have some disappointing, seasons from Emmanuel Mudiay. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But like you said, defensively is where they really had some struggles. But offensively, they were a ton of fun to watch. And they have some nice young pieces moving forward. A guy like Jamal Murray, he played last year with a sports hernia. So I'm expecting a big year from him.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what Jamal Murray can do in his second year. I think it's still kind of to be announced whether he's a point guard or shooting guard or if he's one of these positionless combo guards that we're seeing more and more of in the NBA. But I was really impressed with his off-ball scoring last season, coming off of curls, on catch and shoots, running flare screens to the corners, being the beneficiary of a ton of Jokic passes. And then, I think he struggled a little bit as a pure point guard trying to run the offense facilitating. So it'll be interesting to see what they do this season between Mudiay and Murray and how they shift that balance at point guard.
Well, one nice thing, like you mentioned about Murray, not necessarily, being a true point guard, having a guy like Jokic in the lineup can kind of allow you to do some different things because he can kind of facilitate things. So that's kind of a really nice advantage to have for a Denver team. And you made a really nice addition. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But what would you say was the highlight of the Nuggets season?
For me, it's the emergence of Jokic. He's one of my favorite players to watch in the NBA. I think when I'm looking for like an exciting young player, I look for a unicorn, someone who has just a really unique skill set, something that you haven't really seen too much of before. Like we've been talking about, once they gave him the keys halfway through the season, and Mike Malone realized that he shouldn't be playing a ton of minutes beside him and Mason Plumlee and Kenneth Faried and Nurkic. Once that spacing came, everything was going forward for Jokic. Six triple doubles, 40-point game in Madison Square Garden, which, if you're going to become a superstar in the NBA, you have to have that marquee game in Madison Square Garden, in my opinion. And then, statistically, 25.8 PER, which was higher than Rudy Gobert, Karl Towns, Draymond, DeAndre Jordan and Marc Gasol. I really loved the emergence of Jokic and how much he was able to improve last year.
Yeah, I think he's the easy choice for the highlight. Like we mentioned, when he kind of got the keys to the offense, everything changed for the Nuggets and they became one of the more exciting teams. They made it close in the playoff race. Where would you say that Jokic ranks in terms of, centers? Top five, top three, where do you have him at?
He's probably, in the 5 to 8 range for me. I think he's still absolutely atrocious on the defensive end. And if we're going to look at both sides of the ball, I think that brings him down a lot. I still think he has a ton of room to grow. I mean, he's had a full offseason now, knowing that he's not going to play power forward, that he's not going to have a conventional big next to him. So I think he's a candidate to really take a huge jump up. I'm not really ready to have him in that elite part of the center big men conversation. But, here's the thing I will say about Jokic if you're going to build your team around him. More and more we're seeing that the self-created shots, the isolation shots, those are really inefficient if you live and die by that over the course of a season. I mean, unless you have someone like LeBron or Harden or Kyrie or Durant, you want someone who's going to be a facilitator, who can make your entire team a lot better. You know, there were so many players on Denver last year with just balanced scoring in the double digits: Wilson Chandler, Gallinari, Jameer Nelson, Jokic, Harris, Murray, Will Barton. All those guys were in double digits, and I think Jokic is a huge reason for that, just because he can make everyone a lot better and open up a ton of possibilities for people.
Yeah, I think everybody's numbers on the Nuggets are better when Jokic is on the floor with them, if I'm not mistaken, you know, almost the whole roster. And like you said, I heard some Denver guys mention that, you know, they thought Jokic maybe was a little bit fatigued by the end of the season. He wasn't necessarily ready to take on this big role, so they're expecting a big jump from him. I think from what I look for in Jokic, obviously we know he has a high basketball IQ, so he needs to transfer that to the defensive end and kind of use his body a little bit better. We know he's never going to be an elite athlete, but kind of, you know, positioning, you know, putting yourself in the right position to kind of be a good defender and protect the rim.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, he still has a ton of room to grow. The nice thing is adding Millsap, and we'll get into Millsap a little bit later, but adding Millsap, I think, is the perfect pairing for him on the defensive end. He has a lot of room to improve defensively, but the Nuggets won't really have to rely on him on the back end nearly as much now.
Exactly. That's such a great pair. Like you said, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Also, Jokic, you know, he could get in better shape, we think, too. You know, from a physical standpoint, that'd be something to keep an eye on. Like we said, you know, a lot of improvements possible this year. But disappointment, what was the biggest disappointment for the Nuggets last year?
Yeah, so I think point guard play. And, you know, they have a couple young point guards in Denver. And as we know, point guards is one of the toughest positions to develop automatically, especially with guys 18 and 19 years old coming into the league. I was really disappointed with Emmanuel Mudiay. I think he was kind of a victim, much like Jokic was, of the system that Malone was running first half of the season with the two conventional bigs, because you know, they wanted Mudiay to be more of a facilitating, floor spacing point guard who stood at the top of the key. Like, you know, they wanted him to be a lot like Jeff Teague, but that's not him. He's a guy who wants to use his speed. He wants to be getting downhill, going to the hole, spread pick and roll, dribble handoff stuff. And they didn't run enough of that with Mudiay for the first half of the season. So I'm hoping this year he'll take the jump now in the new system. But yeah, I was a little bit disappointed with Mudiay, and I talked a little bit more earlier about Murray as a point guard, and I still think he has a lot of development out as well. So that led to a ton of Jameer Nelson starts at point guard last season. And you know, that's not great for, in terms of long-term roster building, long-term planning, figuring out, you know, where you're going to be at the point guard quarterback position moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. Jameer Nelson was kind of like a stopgap guy. You know, you don't necessarily want him starting for you. Mudiay, like you said, you know, he just the fit wasn't necessarily there, and it's tough. Like, anybody who doesn't really shoot a consistent three, I think it's tough to play point guard in the NBA. So, you know, until he can kind of prove to be a consistent three-point shooter, which I think would be a better fit with what the Nuggets are trying to do, I think that hurts him a little bit. But I'll be a little bit different. I'll just go with injuries. You know, it seems like Denver always has a ton of injuries. Gallinari missed games. Gary Harris missed games. Wilson Chandler missed games. Will Barton missed games. You know, it just, you know, seems to be a problem for the Nuggets last year. And that kind of always is disappointing because, you know, if they're healthy, we could be talking about them being, you know, a possible eighth seed last year.
Yeah, and you know, the combination, I talked a little bit about the system, but you know, injuries too. They were really riddled by injury last season, and you know, this year I think they've added a little bit more depth, so they can, you know, stand to withhold a lot of those injuries. And they have such a young core, and everyone's 1 year older now, so they should grow and mature. And maybe some of those guys who are toward the end of the bench can step into a more meaningful bench role. And then the other disappointment that I had was just general attendance in Denver. Yeah. I mean, this team has been near the bottom of the league in attendance for a few years now. What gives Colorado, Denver fans out there? I mean, you have one of the most exciting young teams. If I had Nikola Jokic on my team, and I've gone to a couple of games in Denver, compared to other NBA stadiums, they're, you know, reasonably priced tickets. So, I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, we see a lot of powder blue in the crowd this year, because even when they got knocked out of the playoffs on that game winner by Westbrook, the crowd was going nuts on the Nuggets floor, and I didn't understand why, because they had just been knocked out of the playoffs. So the attendance in the crowd is definitely something that I want to see improve. I would love to see, you know, a resurgence of the Nuggets fan base.
Yeah, and this is a team that, you know, could take advantage of that home court advantage. You know, we know in the past teams like the Denver Broncos playing at home has really helped them. So maybe the Nuggets, you know, their crowd could pick it up. They have an exciting young team. So, you know, the last few years I could understand why people might not go. But last year and this year, they have no reason. You know, the Nuggets could definitely have some real fun on the court. And they have, like you said, an exciting young player like Jokic and a few other pieces that are really promising too. But let's talk ranking. You know, Nuggets coming at number 11 in our power rankings. You know, our OTG writers voted on this and we're kind of discussing it here. What are your thoughts on that? Number 11 fair? Too high, too low?
Yeah, I mean, I had them right around 11. I had them at 10, so I think it's a fair spot. They're going to be incredible offensively. But the question to me really is still, what's their defense going to be like? You know, are they going to be able to guard along the wing? Because they kind of mix and match a little bit at small forward. And then their just general inexperience level. I mean, outside of Millsap, this is a team of really young players who haven't played a ton of significant, meaningful games. And I think they're going to make the playoffs, but it's really to be seen how they will perform once they get there.
Yeah, I think this, you know, is a fair ranking, like you said. There's still some issues with the roster. They kind of need to balance it out. I think they have like 5 or 6 power forwards right now.
So many.
They need to find, you know, some homes for those guys and maybe add some small forward depth, some wing depth, because they definitely, like we've mentioned, they need some defensive pop on the perimeter. That'll kind of hold them back this year. But moving forward, this is a really exciting team. And like you said, I have them locked in for the playoffs. And I really like the upside in some of the young pieces on this team.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But let's talk additions. Okay. You know, the Nuggets did have the number 13 pick in the draft. They traded down to pick up the number 24 pick and Trey Lyles from the Utah Jazz. They drafted Tyler Lydon. What are your thoughts on him and what he can bring to the Nuggets this year? And what are your thoughts on the trade, picking up Trey Lyles too?
Yeah, definitely. I got a lot of opinions on both. So, you know, I watched actually a decent amount of Denver Summer League because for another site that I write for, I was assigned to Denver to cover their Summer League. So I watched a fair amount of Tyler Lydon, and I wasn't overly impressed. I mean, he kind of has the size of a power forward at 6'10", but kind of the game of a combo wing, almost similar to what Gallinari had, but obviously not nearly as skilled. But they asked him to do a lot of different stuff at Syracuse, space the floor, take smaller guys into the post, attack closeouts. So I think, you know, he shows a pretty good all-around feel for the game, you know, being utilized in a multitude of different ways at Syracuse. He's 40% from three over 2 years there. You know, I think the real question with him is, can he create his own shot shooting off the dribble, or is he destined to be one of those power forward, small forward combinations that, you know, camp out in the corner and wait for a pass from someone who's driving? And then the other question with him is the same question I have with anyone who comes from Syracuse is, you know, how does he adjust from playing the back line of the Syracuse zone to transitioning to a more man-to-man, switch-heavy NBA atmosphere? So I think Lydon, you know, he's back there, buried on the depth chart. Like we said, there's a ton of power forwards on this team, so he'll struggle for minutes initially. But, you know, he has all the makings to be a decent stretch four.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think he definitely has the potential to be a stretch four, like you said, add some more to his offensive game, improve defensively too. Shout out to him. He's from the 845. That's where I'm from. But also in this deal, which kind of is weird, you don't usually trade for a power forward and sign a power forward and draft a power forward when you already have plenty of power forwards. So what were your thoughts on, you know, drafting Lydon and then also picking up Trey Lyles? Like, it just didn't really make sense, and it's overall a weird situation.
Yeah, I disagreed with their thinking here. I didn't like the trade. Like we said, they have plenty of depth in the front court, and I just would have preferred that they take, you know, a Donovan Mitchell, who looks like the steal of the draft so far, or they really could have padded their wing depth behind Wilson Chandler, drafting like a Justin Jackson or a Terrence Ferguson or OG Anunoby. Those are guys that I think would have made a lot of sense for Denver. So I don't really see a huge benefit of trading back unless they see something in Lyles. And Lyles has been a bit of a roller coaster his first two seasons. He was really productive his rookie year in Utah. You know, they talked about how he could maybe take over the full-time power forward duties from Derek Favors. But then sophomore year, he went into a huge slump. Three-point percentage dropped by 7%, effective field goal percentage fell to 43%. So Lyles is another one of those guys that fits the mold as a good stretch big, but he can't translate it consistently. So, but he's young. He's still really young. So maybe Mike Malone and Tim Connelly see something in him that they can really maximize.
Yeah. And you know what it is too, is, you know, going from a team like Utah that's so defensively minded and then coming to a team like Denver that's so offensively minded, and maybe, you know, being a future power forward that could play with Jokic, being able to spread the floor a little bit more, could definitely, both these guys, you know, be able to spread the floor. So that'll be something interesting. At number 51, they picked up Monty Morris. Any thoughts on him?
Monty Morris, the professional floor general. I actually was pretty impressed with the way he played in Summer League. He is the assist-to-turnover ratio king in college. He was third in the country as a freshman, first as a sophomore, sixth as a junior, and first as a senior, which is absolutely insane to be that good assist-to-turnover ratio in college for 4 years. So a high IQ point guard. He definitely needs to hit the gym. He was looking pretty slender. NBA DraftNet had him listed at 175 pounds at the draft. So that's way, way too slender. I mean, yeah. especially when you already have Will Barton on your team, you definitely don't need two of those guys who are just super skinny. But he strikes me as like the kind of guy who has like the mindset of like an all-pro point guard, but the talent ceiling of like a pretty good college player. But those guys can be totally successful in the league. Like Fred VanVleet was like that. He's someone who comes to mind who's just like, you know, high IQ guy. But I don't think Morris will be getting a lot of playing time. He'll be somewhere in the G League. And you know, Denver's actually one of those teams that doesn't have a G League affiliate. So the Nuggets need to get one of those. Everyone needs one of those.
Yeah, it's getting pretty close to everybody having one. That's actually weird that they don't have one.
But in Colorado Springs or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I believe he's on a two-way contract too, so he obviously is going to spend time in the G League. So that's kind of weird that he doesn't have that, but they'll just send him somewhere else. But let's talk free agency. You know, the Nuggets, they picked up a big fish, and they grabbed Paul Millsap. Big deal, 3 years, $90 million. A little bit cheaper, though, than people thought. I think the last year is either a player option or partially guaranteed. But Millsap, you know, a really underrated power forward, and like we mentioned and hinted at a few times in the pod already, he's an excellent fit for this team.
Yeah. What a great fit on paper Millsap is in Denver. He's someone who can space the floor offensively, which they were looking for at the power forward spot other than Gallinari all season last year. You know, he doesn't need the ball in his hands to be productive. And he's just a veteran winner. I mean, this guy, no matter what his roster looks like, no matter who's taken off his team, he's in the second round of the playoffs every year. And I understand that that's in the East, but Paul Millsap just makes players around him better. And he just brings a winning culture to a team that desperately needs it. And then defensively, he's one of the best defensive power forwards in the league. Twice as many defensive win shares as any Nugget last year. So the perfect pairing to go with Jokic. And I'm just happy for this Denver team. They've been looking for a star player for a long time. They made a big run at Dwayne Wade. They made a monster trade offer for Paul George at the trade deadline. They've been flirting with Kevin Love up until that point. So I'm happy that, you know, this team could add a player like Millsap and that a small market like Denver could be, you know, a frontline free agency destination for at least one frontline player.
Yeah, and it like works out for Millsap too, because, you know, they'll still be a pretty good team. I don't think they'll be contending anytime soon. But like we mentioned, defensively they struggled, and Millsap's probably one of the better defensive players in this league right now. And what he can do from a defensive standpoint, provide you some real versatility. Offensively, he obviously is going to probably take a little bit of a step back, but he'll have a more efficient role playing with other good players around him. We know last year in Atlanta, he had to play with Dwight Howard. They had a lot of injuries, and there wasn't really any consistent offensive play. Playing with a player like Jokic will be really nice for him.
Yeah, definitely. And Millsap just brings a veteran presence that this team has needed. I think he's going to be, you know, off the court, just a consummate professional and leader for a lot of guys, and just a role model off the floor. And the thing that I'll say about Millsap contract-wise as well is they got a third-year option Denver has on that contract, which is at the same time that Jokic's contract runs out. So that's huge for them to only have Millsap sign at that max level deal for 2 years when he's going into his mid-30s. We don't know, you know, how productive he would be in that third year. So I think that kind of flexibility is a huge win for them as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that'll kind of open them up to, you know, have a real splash in free agency, and maybe they end up keeping Millsap at a cheaper price because, I mean, at this point, looking at it, you know, like you said, he's going to be into his mid-30s. You're probably not going to want to pick up that option, but you never know. It really all depends on the cap.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me ask you, but speaking of stars, unless you have more to say about Millsap.
I was just going to mention, this is probably the first time that the Nuggets have signed a big free agent in quite some time.
Yeah, and they've been trying. Like I said, they've been trying to get that premier player and trying to, go behind the scenes and see who would sign an extension with them and, who's liking what they're building. And they're on the map now. I mean, there's a reason why people are paying attention to what Denver's doing. Our writers have them 11th, and they're typically a very overlooked team.
And it kind of worked out. You mentioned it, they've been, dinkering a lot of trade talk, but they almost got Kevin Love, and the Pacers were the one that pulled out of that deal. And it kind of worked out because Millsap is a lot better fit, and he brings that defensive edge, something that we know Kevin Love, doesn't necessarily bring.
Yeah. So they dodged that bullet. But then one thing I wanted to ask you about is this is a team that was rumored in the Kyrie Irving trade rumors the entire process of the way. Everyone was saying that Denver was the kind of team that could put a package together to compete with anyone in the league. If you were running the Nuggets, would you have packaged Gary Harris, Emmanuel Mudiay, and two first-round picks for Kyrie Irving?
I mean, it's a really tough situation. I think it all depends on, Kyrie and if he was willing to re-sign with Denver long-term. If he's willing to, re-sign with Denver long-term, I'm going to consider it a lot more because, like you said, we've been trying to land a big star in Denver for quite some time. Kyrie definitely brings that edge. We mentioned attendance before. Kyrie, I've talked about this on the pod before, he might not necessarily be a top five player, but he has that top five star power.
Yep.
People just know who he is around the world just because of the crazy plays that he does off the dribble, the big shot in the finals. So I think you probably go ahead and pull that trigger with the Nuggets on some type of big deal, even if you might be overpaying a little bit, but you have to have the reassurance from Kyrie that he's going to stay long-term with Denver. What would you do?
Yeah, I would have thought strongly about it. And I'll talk about Gary Harris later. And that doesn't have to be the exact package, but Gary Harris, Mudiay, two first round picks seems pretty fair comp to what Boston had to give up. I probably would have done it. If I had enough faith that Millsap and Jokic were going to propel this team to be, with Kyrie, a 4 or 5 seed in the Western Conference, maybe that high, I pull the trigger. And if they make it to the second round of the playoffs the next couple of years, dare Kyrie to look somewhere else for a new team. And I know that's saying a lot, but like you said, Kyrie brings a lot of stardom with him. I mean, he's one of the top jersey selling guys, sneaker selling in the league. And he has, maybe, like you said, not top five player talent stardom, but he has absolute celebrity top five stardom amongst NBA players.
Yeah, and a lot of people just love his stuff, especially his shoes and stuff like that. So, I mean, it would definitely have been an interesting situation if they were able to keep a guy like Jamal Murray, too, in the situation. That's another guy that has the potential to be a really good player. So, a lot of interesting stuff. Then the Nuggets did make a move recently, actually, a couple of days before this podcast, which was kind of really surprising, and they re-signed Mason Plumlee. And it wasn't until qualifying
3 years. Offer. No, it was certainly was not. I mean, I was very surprised. 3 years, $41 million for Mason Plumlee. That's absolutely maddening to me. This point, mid-September, not a lot of teams out there competing with Denver for Mason Plumlee's services. At all. So I don't know where that kind of money came from. I mean, good for Mason Plumlee and his agent to convince Denver that they need him that much. But I feel like Denver could have had him for much less. And Plumlee is clearly now behind Jokic and Millsap in terms of minutes. So, I mean, that's probably going to cap his minutes to 20, 22 per game. And I just don't see why they couldn't spread that out between Fareed, Trey Lyles, a minimum contract on Chris Humphreys or Tiago Splitter, Jordan Hill. Those guys are still out there. I don't know why you need to pay Mason Plumlee that much money. I mean, you follow the Nets. You saw Mason Plumlee early on. Am I wrong?
No, you're 100% right. I have a theory that maybe Mason Plumlee has some blackmail on the Nuggets. Even the trade they made for him last year, it didn't make much sense. He never really felt like a good fit with that team. And Mason Plumlee's a player that he's just not necessarily as good in a bench role, but he's not good enough to start either. And he has, so many limited offensive options. All he can do is put back, he can pass a little bit. He can't really dribble that well and he can't shoot the ball a lick. So I think he's just a liability to have out there. And I mean, it just didn't make sense with the pieces they have to lock up money to Mason Plumlee.
Yeah, and I think I don't understand why they, you know, insist on having so many conventional bigs. Like, if you're going to build this team around Jokic and you're going to play him as many minutes as you can, then you should try to find guys, especially if you're going to pay them that much money, guys that he can complement. And
100% agree.
Like, if you, like you said, if Plumlee can't shoot, he can't cut off ball, then what is he really useful for if he's going to be playing with Jokic? I mean, there are plenty of big men that you can get who are serviceable, who you could bring off the bench for $2-3 million.
Exactly. And, you know, they're going to have to pay some of these young guys in the future, like we mentioned, and having a contract like that on the books and somebody who's just not going to be easy to move, like centers that really can't shoot unless you do a lot of other things really well, they're hard to play. You know, you can't play Plumlee with a Moutier because they both can't shoot threes, or, you know, another player that can't shoot because your spacing is going to be killed. And spacing is so important. And like you said, if you want to be a successful team, you need to start to get players that fit Jokic and kind of run a system that's around him, not just, you know, double big man is just kind of a thing of the past.
Right. He's just, I mean, and there's nothing wrong with having a non-floor spacing big man. It's just how they fit into the rest of the system. So, I mean, if Plumlee was like a prolific rim runner, someone who could really protect the paint, someone who could catch lobs and dunk at an extreme rate, you know, someone who had that kind of nuclear athleticism, then yeah, I could understand why you would want to pay him this money. I mean, still Denver is a weird fit for me given where their roster is, but you know, even Mason Plumlee just as a player, to me, just doesn't make that much sense outside of Denver system anyway.
Exactly. And there's a reason he was still a free agent up to this point and nobody offered him an offer sheet. So I think people kind of realize that this is kind of a weird move, especially after making such a great move for Millsap. And we already touched on the 1 million big men they have. So it's just weird. But let's talk departures. You know, they lost Gallinari, Mike Miller, Roy Hibbert, you know, obviously – those guys didn't really play much. Gallinari played a big role when he wasn't.
I shouldn't laugh at Roy Hibbert, but
it's fair. It's fair. He, you know, he talks a little bit too much too, and he's really falling off. But enough about him. Gallinari, you know, he's a player in Denver who had some really nice moments, but he just seemed like he was always injured. And you know, what are they going to lose with Gallinari gone?
I mean, Gallinari and Wilson Chandler, two of the remaining people who came over for Carmelo back in that trade. Now Gallinari's gone. I mean, he was the one person that they lost because of signing Millsap. Obviously, they had to make cuts otherwise. What I think they'll miss most in Gallinari is obviously his floor spacing. He's a solid pick and roll ball handler, which is kind of surprising given that he's a 6'10 player, but I actually really like the way that he facilitates. I actually think he was probably better than Emmanuel Mudiay in a lot of ways as a facilitator. Gallinari, obviously a really good shooter from the outside. But the thing, what I think makes him expendable for the direction that Denver's trying to go in, is that Gallinari is kind of a ball stopper. He loves to catch it, hold it, scan the defense, you know, really think about what his decision's going to be. And that slows the offense down a lot. And I think Denver is trying to move to more of an up-tempo pace, move this ball from side to side, you know, create mismatches in the defense, off balances in the defense. And Gallinari is a player that's not going to be able to do that. I think he's a great fit for what the Clippers need to do, but not a great fit for the direction that Denver's trying to move in.
Yeah. And like, honestly, you know, moving forward in the NBA, obviously Gallinari can't defend three, so he's probably better off at the four. And that, you know, obviously there's no minutes at the four to be given out, especially when you have Millsap. So that all made sense. I mentioned on the Clippers pod, I'm kind of confused about what he's going to do in Los Angeles, because I'm not a big fan of a Gallinari, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan front court.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think Gallinari is incredibly skilled. I think, you know, a lot of people just consider him to be a stretch four, stretch three, someone who pulls up, but he's a great ball handler. And like, with Chris Paul gone, I think that offense completely transforms, as long as Doc Rivers is willing to admit that he should be playing a more modern offense and realize that Blake Griffin as a point forward is, you know, probably something that he should have went to more significantly, you know, years ago. So I'm kind of at a loss for words when it comes to predicting what the Clippers offense is going to be like. But I love his floor spacing and I love his playmaking. And I think, you know, you can get him and Griffin in a 3-4 pick and roll. You can get him and DeAndre in a 3-5 pick and roll. And that creates a ton of mismatches. I agree with you defensively. He's going to be probably pretty lost trying to guard the best wings in the Western Conference. But offensively, I really love the fit in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I don't have any real questions about them offensively because, like you said, Gallinari is a very skilled guy and he's going to cause a lot of mismatch being the size that he is and the ability to shoot. But defensively, you know, they're not going to be able to really defend many teams. Yeah. They're just going to be so much slower. And like we said, you know, the wing defense isn't there. But enough about the Clippers. Let's talk starters for the Nuggets.
So I think they stick with Emmanuel Mudiay at the point guard position. I think they've learned, or probably with a little bit of reflection, that Jamal Murray is best used as a combo guard, someone who can play a little bit of shooting guard, but is not like a pure point guard. So I think they test out Mudiay, you know, with more space in the system. Gary Harris at the two guard, I think that's a no-brainer. Wilson Chandler at the three, they're pretty much their only versatile defender on the wing, and their only pure small forward. I think that's a no-brainer. And then Millsap and Jokic, those are obviously no-brainers too. To me, the only question is what they do at point guard.
Yeah, and point guard's a position we could see change as the season goes on. See, I'm just not very high on Mudiay, so I don't know if they start him. I think I would rather go with Jamal Murray and then, you know, worst case scenario, go with Jameer Nelson a little bit just to actually start but not play big minutes. I just not a huge fan of what Mudiay does. I think I'd rather go with Murray. Like I said earlier on, they can kind of get away with him not being a true point guard, having the playmaking of a Jokic on the floor.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the nice thing about having Nelson is that you know there's someone back there waiting for minutes who can just run an NBA offense, who can just fit seamlessly. He's not going to be spectacular, but if Murray and Mudiay don't develop the way that Denver wants and it's really slowing down the offense, then I could see them going to Nelson and just saying, here, run the offense, do what you've been doing for – probably what, like 10 years in the NBA? I don't know how many years he's up to now.
Even more, maybe more.
Yeah. He's just a professional point guard. Like Monty Morris was in college.
Yeah. And it's a luxury to have a guy like that back there that can kind of just ease things up if things are getting a little messy. Yeah. And he kind of just knows how to run the show. But the other four, like we said, are locked in. Let's talk breakout starter. Who's breaking out in the starting lineup?
Oh, man, I have him as my most improved player, picking him this year, Gary Harris. I love Gary Harris's game. He was 15 points, 3 assists, 2 boards, and a steal last season. I think all of those numbers can jump up significantly in a faster-paced system where they move the ball from side to side. Harris is a great shooter. He's a solid defender. He's an unbelievable cutter off ball, one of the best cutters in the NBA. If you haven't had a chance to look at the way that Gary Harris moves without the ball, it is like you could put it into a basketball textbook. And I just really think that he's going to benefit from the added space, the added pace on the floor. And, you know, I expect him to be one of the best shooting guards in the league by the end of the year. I mean, I think he's clearly behind Harden, Klay Thompson, DeMar DeRozan. But I think he's right by the end of the year. I think he's right in that next group with like Bradley Beal, CJ McCollum. I think Harris has that kind of ceiling and I expect him to get there. And I think that's part of the reason why Tim Connelly didn't want to ship him off for Kevin Love or Kyrie Irving, because Gary Harris to me is a player that's going to make a huge jump.
Well, and he's a player that constantly gets better. And like you said, playing with Jokic, he's a great fit being able to cut and shoot the ball. I didn't realize his shooting numbers were so efficient, you know, shooting over 50% and 42% from three, you know, that's not something you necessarily see from a guard. And he plays good defense too. So he's definitely one of those like complementary players that, you know, he's not necessarily ever going to be your number one or number two option, but he's a guy that can really just, you know, fit in a lot of roles and really help your team win games. For me, I'm just going to go with the easy one. I'm going to go with a layup here. Nikola Jokic, you know, a full season starting, having a player like Paul Millsap next to him. And like you said, hopefully having Gary Harris Jr. healthy the whole year. I think this dude could really have a big season and really make people recognize that he's a top five center.
Yeah. And it really, to me, it comes down to, you know, how creative Mike Malone can be in his offensive sets. Is he really just going to give everything to Jokic and just run the offense through him, play with a ton of spot up shooting? And I think they should. I really think they should. That's why when you have such a rare talent like that, it's hard to defend against. And when you give the ball to Jokic in the high post. He brings play opposing big men away from the basket, and that really limits shot blocking on the other side, which opens up a lot of driving lanes, a lot of cutting lanes to the hoop. And yeah, I expect a huge year out of Jokic as well.
Yeah, and that's what another nice thing about the Nuggets is they have young players that are already good players, but they're going to keep getting better. So that's what.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Matt.
So the last thing that I wanted to say about Harris is I don't know if you caught it, but I was listening to Jared Dudley on Woj's podcast, which I think came out last night.
Yeah, I've heard people talking about it. I haven't gotten a chance to listen.
Oh, Jared Dudley is spectacular. He's going to be in media at some point. He should have his own podcast already. But back to the point, he was saying basically that unless you're like – you know, one of the top 10 players in the league, everyone else is just a role player. You know, you might have some really, really good role players, you know, that are, you know, top 20, top 30 guys, but, you know, it's really about how you fit into your role. And Gary Harris, for me, is someone that fits seamlessly into any sort of role, any sort of offense. He can play with the ball, without the ball. He doesn't really, you know, demand a lot of attention from his coaching staff. He's just someone that I think can really fit in doing absolutely anything. He's a Swiss Army knife to me on offense.
And I think that's the ideal type of player you always want. And, you know, they might necessarily be as talented as somebody else, but they're going to go up a little higher in my book just because they're able to fit so seamlessly with so many other different pieces. And that's, you know, just such an advantage to have for a coaching staff.
Yeah, definitely.
But a breakout bench player for the Nuggets this year.
Yeah, I wanted to pick Hernan Gomez so badly because I love his game. I watched a lot of Eurobasket, and I was really impressed with the Hernan Gomez as a couple. I really wanted to pick him, but Jamal Murray is my breakout player from the bench. I think they finally realized that they don't need to run him as a traditional quote-unquote point guard, that they can run him off screens, run him on pull-ups, let him penetrate into the paint and then kick out. The guy has just unlimited range offensively. So I expect Jamal Murray to take a big jump, whether that's on the bench or in a starting role. I really like his ability and his chances to get to the next level.
Yeah, Murray is a great choice. You know, I had him starting, but if I didn't, he would have been my easy bench choice. I'm going to go with Juan Hernan Gomez, like you said. You know, he definitely came and played some minutes last year when they were dealing with some injuries and definitely flashed some stuff. It's a risky pick for me just because I don't know necessarily how many minutes he's going to be getting. But, you know, I really, like you said, I really like what he can bring to this team, and he brings some nice energy.
Yeah, and I mean, whether they're playing him at the small forward, at the power forward, I think he's a player that also has not even close to reach his ceiling yet if he works out the right way. You know, another one of those players that can really stretch the floor and a good complement to what Jokic can bring as well.
But let's talk wins. Best case scenario win-wise for the Nuggets next year.
Oh, man. Okay, best case scenario. I could see them getting to the 4 seed if everything absolutely clicks. Do I think it's likely? Absolutely not. I mean, I think some weird stuff would probably have to happen at the top of the Western Conference for that to happen. But, I mean, that's the level of talent that I think they've built up. I think that they could get, in theory, you know, well over 50 wins, probably close to the mid 50 marks. In a best case scenario, I could see them doing that.
I think, you know, this kind of just sucks for the Nuggets in the sense that the West is so stacked this year. You know, maybe another year they might have been able to grab home court. For me, I think the highest they could probably get is maybe a 5th seed. But I think, you know, a few wins over 50 is probably possible. I think best case scenario is between like 50 and 52 wins. You know, like you said, they're really talented, but so is the rest of the West. So that's going to be a big thing that prevents them from being, you know, as good as they maybe could possibly be in another season. Worst case scenario.
Yeah, worst case scenario. Okay, so, you know, I could see them missing the playoffs in a worst case scenario just because the Western Conference is so competitive that there are a lot of great teams who are going to be in that, like, 7 to 10 or 11 range. Like, a lot of that is pretty interchangeable for me. You know, in that scenario, worst case scenario, I think they play absolutely zero defense. You know, I'm not even really sure that they can improve that much on defense. I mean, Millsap moves the needle a little bit, but they didn't really add much else defensively. Like I said, I'm very concerned what they have on the defensive side of the ball at the wing position. other than Wilson Chandler, who's doesn't, you know, the longest history of health. You know, they're going to go with Will Barton a lot at the three, who I think is too skinny to guard some of the better small forwards in the league. And they could go with Wancho, but I consider him to be more of like a four and then sometimes a three. So in a worst-case scenario, I could see their defense being absolutely terrible, and they lose a lot of games like 130 to 125.
Yeah, I think defense is obviously an issue. I think they're banking a lot on internal improvement. You know, some of these young guys just pick up the toughness and the energy they put on the defensive end. I think worst-case scenario, you're right. You know, I think maybe 40 wins just like last year. But for me, for them really to not make the playoffs, I think Jokic would probably have to get injured and miss, you know, a big chunk of games, and that would really kill them. So I think, you know, worst case, around 40 wins and just miss out on the postseason. But realistically, what are you expecting next year?
Okay, I have Denver at 48 wins overall, which is a big jump from where they were last year. I have them as the five seed in front of Minnesota, behind Oklahoma City. And then I think Oklahoma City would blow their doors off in the first round. I think Denver would just be happy to get there and have a couple home games. But I really like the improvement that this team has made. I think Millsap, like I said, is the perfect fit for what they're trying to do. I love their young core. I like the chances of a whole bunch of them to take the next step, to go to the next level. And I don't think it's unreasonable to say that they could be, you know, one of the best five, six teams in the Western Conference.
Yeah, no, honestly, it's rare that someone has the same exact number that I have written down, but I have them at 48. I think they're just – the West is just so talented that they won't quite get to 50, but they'll be competing, you know, for that sixth, fifth seed possibly. Kind of depends on how some of the, you know, teams like the Timberwolves do with all the pieces gel and stuff like that.
Who do you think is better, Minnesota or Denver, if you had to hit your wagon to one?
At the start of the season or by the time the season ends?
Most record at the end of the regular season.
I think record-wise, Denver, I think, might end up having a better record. But
okay, I agree with that.
Minnesota, I think, might be a team going into the postseason that you don't necessarily want to face.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think Millsap, you know, he just creates a winning culture. And for me, Minnesota is one of those teams that has a lot of questions, spacing-wise.
Yeah, shooting's a real issue for them.
I love the way that the system projects in Denver much more than I do in Minnesota. Like, I see the talent that Minnesota has, but I like the way that the puzzle fits better in Denver.
Yeah, they still, I think, you know, need to figure some things out there. Like you said, shooting and spacing, like, obviously, like I mentioned a million times on this pod, that's my thing. I like teams that can shoot and space the floor. So, like you said, you know, Denver, you can kind of see how everything gels. They do have some question marks with the balance of the roster, but where so you look at Minnesota and there could be issues with that starting lineup, even shooting wise.
Yeah. Like, I have no questions. I mean, other than point guard, like if Moutier can be serviceable enough to just get the offense going, because once the offense is going, he doesn't really have to do that much. Like, get it into Jokic's hand and just start moving off ball. I mean, that's really the only question I have about Denver's starting lineup. And there are many more questions to me schematically with Minnesota.
Yeah, and it's like, the you know, Denver's pretty much mostly the same exact team except Paul Millsap, where so is Minnesota. They're putting a lot of new pieces together. Wiggins and Towns aren't used to playing with a player like Jimmy Butler and a Jeff Teague. So that'll be an interesting pod, too, to talk about that team. They're a little bit higher in the rankings, but I think that's more based off of talent than actual fit.
Yeah.
But let's talk the truth. The emoji today. No, this, honestly, I was trying to come up with something really clever, and I just was having such a hard time to doing it. So I just took the easy one, you know, like there's that guy and he has his hand raised, you know, I think. Yep. So what that kind of means is, you know, the Nuggets are kind of getting everybody's attention. Like, look at us. We just signed Paul Millsap.
Oh, that's more creative than what I have. But keep going.
And we're going to make a splash in the West. But, you know, I wanted to really do something about like Colorado and smoking weed. I did that one in the past, but I could not come up with a good one today.
Yeah, I mean, mine's just as not even as good as that. Mine's the volcano eruption. I just think there are breakout years in store for Jokic and Harris and Murray, and then a race car as well. Just because I think this team is going to be moving at a million miles an hour on offense. I think, you know, anything that was holding them back last season offensively is not going to hold them back anymore. I think they figure it all out on that side of the floor. And just defense is the only thing to me. So maybe if there was like a matador emoji, just I think that's the kind of defense that Denver will probably play.
Yeah, no, that volcano is a good one. You know, they are going to kind of erupt on the scene. Like we mentioned it a few times on the pod, the Nuggets aren't a team that people are really paying attention to. And, you know, the past few seasons, I've been keeping my eye on them, not only for the fact that they had some nice young pieces, but they had some nice young assets. So they're always a team involved in trade talk. But let's talk league pass. Where do you have the Nuggets ranked 1 through 10?
All right, so I think I probably pissed off Heat fans last week by going really low on them and saying that I would pick, you know, I would comp them to an HGTV show. But for Denver, they're a strong 8 out of 10 for me. I love everything that they're about, and they have everything that I want in a league pass team. Fast-paced offense, unicorn best player in Jokic, an internal point guard battle between Moutier and Murray, and what I think is the best mascot in the NBA in Rocky the Mountain Lion, which is an underrated aspect in picking a league pass team. But I always pick a Western Conference team each year to pay extra attention to. You know, last year for me it was Utah, and I think Denver is going to be the one this year. I am really excited to see what they can do this season.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because Utah was a team that I usually keep an eye on. The Blazers are another team I like to watch. But the Nuggets are kind of moving up in that, especially what they did at the end of last season. And like you said, they're going to score a ton of points. For me, a 7 out of 10. I don't know if I mentioned to you this on the other pod. I have a skewed scale because at number 10 is the Warriors, and there's no team at number 9 to kind of keep the, you know, they're at another level for me in my rankings. So 7 out of 10, I think, is the highest I've done so far. But before I ask you about the TV show portion.
Okay, but hold on. See, for me, like, the Warriors, they're, like, I know what they are. Like, they're exciting, but they're going to kill so many teams on a nightly basis. Like, the only times I would want to see them, like, on a league pass is against one of the elite teams. And even then, there's a good chance that they blow them out by 20. So, like, I respect your scale, but for me, like, Golden State's like a 7 or a 6.
Well, I think, and for me,
even though they have like all the talent in the world.
Well, I want to watch the offensive talent, and like you said, against the elite teams. But I think for me, it's more of like appreciating the history of the aspect that the Warriors are going to go down probably as one of these teams. Okay. You know, I want to appreciate every moment I can of a KD, a Steph Curry, a Klay Thompson, a Draymond Green. We don't know how long it'll last. So I want to suck that all in before, you know, something crazy happens on Twitter and Katie leaves.
Well, that's why, like, this is a great question for the podcast, I think, is because, like, you can interpret it a lot of different ways. Like, a team like Philadelphia, to me, would be like a 7 or an 8, like a strong 7 or an 8, because they just have so many interesting pieces. Like, but they're not nearly in the same stratosphere as Golden State. So that's interesting that, like, we just have different approaches to, like, what we look for in a league pass rating.
Well, and then, I mean, the Warriors are kind of like a special cause because usually that's what I look at, because I'll have some teams that are in the top 10 and they don't necessarily play exciting, you know, style of basketball. But like another team that, to give you an idea, kind of giving out an early ranking, another team that I'll be ranked really high is Houston.
Yeah. Oh, me too.
That's why it's so.
Oh, me too. I want to see. I just want to see like how long it takes for Harden and CP3 to like get pissed off at each other, like, you know, on camera, like in front of each other, to like where one is like throwing their hands in the air and the other one's like rolling his eyes at the other one. I just want to see that happen and like see how long it takes.
It's going to definitely be an interesting relationship and how that works out. I'm really intrigued by that. And I'm intrigued by the whole Houston roster, but enough about that. I want to ask you one more question.
Yeah.
Who would you take right now? Jokic or Porzingis?
Oh man. You know, I think I would still take Porzingis just because of his isolation scoring capability. I think and his ability to, you know, stretch the floor a little bit further out than Jokic. I mean, I love Jokic's facilitating, but sometimes, you know, when you need a bucket, when you need superstars, like I see Porzingis being that guy that can take a team to the next level, whereas I see Jokic being that guy who makes like every player a little bit better but can't like take over the game in the sense that he is just that absolute killer that you need in the playoffs. So I would take Porzingis. It's really, really close for me because I love Jokic a lot. What would you do?
Honestly, I think I might go with Porzingis too. I know a lot of people will be offended by that, but I think the fact that you mentioned the athletic upside on Porzingis as well as the defensive upside,
yeah,
and the fact that he can kind of get you buckets, where it's like Porzingis is like definitely your number one score. He could be a number one type of scoring option on your team and it provide like that all-around impact. Where like you said, with Jokic, you know, he's going to be more of that facilitating type that's going to make your team better. I think it, you know, every time when you're comparing players, it always matters on the situation, but I think Porzingis might have a little bit more value to me in terms of upside right now.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And like Porzingis to me is like the mega unicorn. Like we talk about a lot of unicorns, but he is like the unicorniest of the unicorns. We have never seen anyone like at his size and his length and his quickness, like with that type of skill set. So like if he can figure that all out, and now that like Phil Jackson is gone and they're not completely dependent on the triangle, like if he can figure that all out, we will see some stuff from Porzingis that we have never seen in the league before.
Exactly. I'm really high. And if anybody wants to hear me talk a lot about Porzingis, listen to the Knicks preview pod.
I can hear all the salty Knicks fans be like, oh, he's not a winner. Like I have a lot of friends like that.
Yeah. I actually get into a debate with another guy at OTG, Harris Richard, about, you know, Porzingis's upside. I'm a lot higher on him. You know, some people are a little bit down on him the last few seasons, but like, look at the Knicks roster.
Oh, it's an absolute mess. And like when you're that young, and you're in like that much of a side like clown show, and you got Carmelo who just like, he has one foot out the door, and you have Phil Jackson coaching the team, but he's not even there. And
yeah,
like it was a mess. Any player needs structure. Like, how do you expect anyone at that age, 20, 21 years old, to like be what people expect him to be if you're not going to put a good structure around him?
Exactly. And it's not to take anything away from Jokic. I believe, you know, he could easily, you know, Jokic probably is a little bit better right now. It's just that we're a little bit higher on the Porzingis upside, and Jokic could end up being the better player just because of that basketball IQ type of stuff. But let me look at you one more question. You would watch the Nuggets over what TV show that you like?
So one of my absolute favorite TV shows right now, Silicon Valley on HBO. I would choose the Nuggets over them because I'm really into the Nuggets this year, but Silicon Valley, great show. Ehrlich Bachman is one of the funniest characters, in my opinion, on TV right now. So my pick would be Silicon Valley. I don't know if you watch that, but
I got to check it out. Honestly, I've watched a good amount of TV shows. I'm a good multitasker. Okay. So I like to be, you know, on my laptop and watching TV. Like I think you mentioned before, kind of in the background type of thing.
Yeah.
So I watch my share of TV, but I should have probably picked a better show for this one, but I'm going to go with Blacklist. You know, okay. I don't know if you ever saw that. It's on NBC. But it kind of got a little bit too corny. So it's usually tough with those FBI shows to keep it realistic for a while.
Yeah. Hey, look, that show got corny to you. You know, if Denver's defense doesn't work out, they could go downhill really quickly too. So
it's exactly. Yeah, very true. But that wraps it up. Matt, thank you for filling in for Corey. It's always great to have you on. And as always, thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.